I'm talking to you this morning on the threat of atheism. Is there a God? How may we know there is a God? When we look at the situation as it is today, we come to the conclusion that nothing could have happened merely by accident or chance. We're living in a cosmos, an orderly arrangement, instead of chaos. There is a reign of law, ladies and gentlemen, instead of anarchy. There are marks of intelligence everywhere. And we raise the question, how could material substance produce mind with the power of thinking, feeling, and willing? How could thought evolve out of non-thinking substance? Now, I think these are pertinent questions that deserve an answer. And chance is not the answer. There are many exacting conditions in this universe that could not exist in the proper relationship simply by chance. Let me give you a very simple illustration. If we took 10 pennies and numbered them 1 through 10 and put them in a box, the chance of you drawing number 1 out of the box would be 1 in 10. We return penny number 1 into the box. Then the chance of you drawing penny number 2 in sequence is 1 in 100. Putting that penny back in, the chance then increases of you drawing penny number 3 to 1 in 1,000. For a person to draw 1 through 10 in sequence out of that box is 1 in 10 billion. Now, we're just talking about 1 through 10. In this universe, almost innumerable conditions that must be found in proper relationship in order, or as I should say, for chance to have taken, accident to have taken place. They would, they're just too numerous for this ever to have occurred or happened. We've heard the saying, maybe you have, that if a million monkeys hit the keys of a million typewriters for a million years, a Shakespearean play could have been produced. But I like what Dr. Bolton Davidheiser said. He said the unlikeness of this would never happen. He said if a million monkeys hit the keys of a million typewriters that were very simple, that it would take 284 billion years to type the first line of Hamlet. And the atheists tell us we only have 5 billion. that the earth is 5 billion or 5.5 billion years old. Man's only been around maybe 1 million years, according to their theory. And yet, in those 1 million years, everything by accident and by chance has developed. Who can believe it? Murray Edens of Massachusetts Institute of Technology said that the possibility of the present complex universe by chance equals zero. Now that's the only solution they have, ladies and gentlemen, for why things are as they are, is by accident or chance. And it just could not have happened. The odds are infinite. It could not have taken place. We're living in a very complex universe. The earth rotates on its axis at 1,000 miles per hour. Let's say we reduce that to 100 miles an hour. Our days would be so long that things would burn up. Are the nights so long that things would freeze? The earth tilts on its axis 23 degrees to give us the four seasons. December the 21st, it'll be 23 degrees south of the equator. That's why we have winter. But if it didn't slant 23 degrees, ladies and gentlemen, vapors from the ocean would move north and south, piling up continents of ice. The sun is 92 million miles away from the earth, just at the right distance to give us the warmth. Move it 5 degrees closer, and the temperature on the earth would be 900 degrees Fahrenheit. The surface of the sun is 12,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Somebody says this all but chance. No, things are too obvious to be a matter of chance. The moon is 243,000 miles away. What if it were just 50,000? Twice a day, if the moon was just 50,000 miles away, there would be tides that would submerge the continents and erode away the mountains of this earth. What if the atmosphere was thinner than what it is? Meteorites or meteors would come through the atmosphere, not burning up, and bombard the earth, that constantly fires would be everywhere. There couldn't be any life existing on the earth. What am I talking about? I'm talking about, ladies and gentlemen, that chance cannot explain accident for this universe, for our life. There are too many variables. There are too many things that are working in right relationship for chance to have ever taken place. Now I want to offer this morning hurriedly some reasons or plausible proofs as to why God is. Somebody says, "Preacher, we all believe this. I know you do. But it certainly helps to enhance our faith and to provide ourselves with some material to help others in a time of unbelief and doubt that we're faced and confronted with day by day of our lives. I believe in God, ladies and gentlemen, first of all, because of the universal belief in God. Now, I grant that people everywhere don't believe in the God of the Bible, but they do believe in God. Even in the darkest portions of Africa or South America, people have their gods. It may be the sun. It may be some little figure that's been hewn out of the stone. But they have their gods. There is a craving and yearning for God. It's part of man. And as David said in Psalms 42 verse 1, that my soul panteth after thee. Men have religious instincts. How many of you back a few years ago saw on television or read in the papers about the discovery of the Tazadays in the Philippines? In 1971, there was a group of people found in the jungles of the Philippines. They were totally isolated, had been from society for their lives. And yet, one interesting thing that they observed or found was that they were religiously inclined and believed in a God, and that they were looking for him to come to help them. And they called him Diwata. Even when people are secluded, they believe in some kind of a God. Now, why is this, ladies and gentlemen? Did matter or nature itself plant within the hearts and minds of individuals something that really doesn't exist? Then nature becomes a falsifier. How in the world did man in his intellect ever come up with the idea that there is God if he simply is the product of matter? The second reason is the reason of cause, called the cosmological. Everything is contingent upon something else. We call it the cause and effect. In Hebrews 3 and verse 4, the writer said, every house is builded by some man. But God built all things. Now, that's a very elementary illustration. But it's so obvious, so simple. When you see a house, you know that it just didn't happen itself. Trees cannot decide that we want to become lumber and erect a house. Intelligence does that. When you see a house or building, you say, somebody built that. It said of an ambassador to France years ago, that he had a planetary system that he had built himself. And an atheist friend of his asked him when he saw it, he said, who made that? He told him, nobody. It just happened. He looked somewhat astonished and surprised. It just didn't happen. Somebody had to make it, ladies and gentlemen. And that's true with this universe. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. We're living in a house, as it were, on this earth. And who made it? It's totally stupid and absurd for an individual to say that things just happen by chance in view of this universe, and as we see, everything is contingent upon something else. That's true with the tree, contingent upon the seed, which was contingent upon the tree. That's true with animal life, whether it be man or an animal. That is contingent upon the parent stock. And the same thing is true with Jehovah. We hear what the psalmist said in Psalms 90 and verse 2. before the mountains were formed, or the earth and the world were brought forth, even unto everlasting to everlasting, thou art God. Friend, the first cause is God. Somebody says, preacher, and this is a question that's brought up sometimes by children, and even I've had adults to ask it. If God is the ultimate cause, and everything is contingent upon Him, where did He come from? And the response to that is that God has always been. He's eternal. Friend, something has always had to have been. That's obvious. That's axiomatic. What has always been is matter or mind. And I raise the question, which is the most plausible? Well, mind is. Mind is eternal, not matter. Matter works upon, mind works upon matter, not the reverse. Mind moves matter and changes matter, but matter doesn't do that to the mind. I believe in God because that there has to be a cause for every effect. Thirdly, I believe in God because of the design of the universe. Paley said in his book, one of them, he said a watch or a clock implies a clockmaker or a watchmaker. Everyone this day and time has a watch, a clock. In fact, several of them. But this just didn't come together on its own. Somebody had to shape these pieces, these cogs. There had to be intelligence behind the making of this watch. Now, this universe, ladies and gentlemen, is a time clock, as it were. In fact, we set our watches by the sun. I want to know who made the perfect time clock. Man made this one I'm wearing and what you're wearing. I want to know who made the timepiece that this one is set by. There's design in the universe. In Copenhagen, Denmark, in the city hall, there's one of the most complex clocks in all the world. There was a man by the name of Jens Olsen who from childhood dreamed of being a clockmaker. And he studied it and he worked on it, and at the age of 70 years he began to put it together. This clock shows that he built and is in the city hall in Copenhagen. This clock shows Central European time, sidereal time, local time, true solar time in Copenhagen, equation of time, time everywhere in the world, sunrise and sunset by Central European time, as well as by true solar time, Gregorian calendar, not through yet, Gregorian calendar with day, month, year, astronomical motions, appearance of stars in the sky, motions of the celestial pole, geocentric revolution, Julian day and year, and there's not, listen to this, there's not but 0.4 seconds deviation, and that's minus, in 300 years of the right time. Who made it? Well, it just didn't happen by chance. This man made it. God made the universe. Look not only at that, ladies and gentlemen, design, but consider the animal instinct. I think the animal instinct is the most fascinating thing I've ever studied. Take the eel. Every year, There comes the eels from Europe and those from America. And they meet south of Bermuda to breed and die. The young ones make their way back to their place where their parents came from. They go back to Europe. They go up the creeks. They go in the ponds. The same thing is true with the American eel. And you'll never catch an American eel in Europe or European waters, and you'll never catch a European eel in American waters, and I want to know how they know the difference. They didn't come from there. They were born in the waters below Bermuda, and yet they go back to the right place. How? Chance? You take old Dobbin, and I've seen it happen down in eastern Kentucky. Somebody would just get a little bit too more than he could hold with that white lightning down there, and he'd just get on the old horse and head her in that direction. And she'd make her way home 3, 4, 5 miles on a night as dark as pitch. How? Well, I'm told it's a matter of the heat ratio from the side of the road, and the road picked up to some extent of the through the eye of the infrared heat. Now, who made it that way? Who made it that way? You take a homing pigeon. You can put it in a box. It turns around and around. You can carry that pigeon for miles. Turn it loose, and it takes off, comes right back where you got it from. Huh? The honeybee is an interesting creature. You can take a stand of bees, and you can put it in the truck, and you can carry it for 500,000 miles. You set up the stand, the bees can leave the next morning and go for 2 miles, come right back to where they left that stand. Why? And I could just go on and on. The salmon is another interesting creature. A salmon comes from the ocean, goes up the river from where it was spawned, and always travels on the side of the river that the stream it intends to go up comes into. And you can take it and change it, and it'll come right back to that same place and go back to where it was spawned. And then it spawns and dies. And here are the small ones. They leave that place and go back out into the ocean until they get ready to spawn and then come right back to the same spot. I want to know why that is. And the only answer I have, ladies and gentlemen, is that God made them that way. Look at the human being. David said in Psalms 139 that we are fearfully and wonderfully made. Back some years ago, there was a series of articles in Reader's Digest talks about Joel's heart and various organs in Joel's body. And that's some of the most fantastic reading I ever read. You just take the eye, for example. That's all the time we've got to deal with this morning briefly. But the eye of a human being is self-focusing. And it can perceive objects in varying distances from a few inches up to miles. Now you take a camera, the best one we got. We've got to focus it, or somebody has to set it to focus. But the human eye focuses and sees several inches or miles. The eye has self-adjusting shutter. The eye contracts, the pupil does, to automatically keep or let just a certain amount of light in. The eye can perceive objects in different directions, for it is hinged in such a way that it can look up and down or side left and right without ever the head moving. The eye has a self-cleaning mechanism. Why is this? Did it just happen that way? Now, I can't, for the sake of me, understand, ladies and gentlemen, by chance, why I've got an eye, or two of them, that are located where they are, Why aren't they out here on the end of your fingers? You ever think about that? Huh? You know, they wouldn't last very long on the end of her fingers. They'd be put out overnight, probably. But they're protected. They're protected. Somebody asked years ago in a debate, in fact, a teller it was debating Bales. And he was being rather facetious. And he said, Bales, he said, I want to ask you something. He said, when you got something wrong with you, you need surgery like appendicitis, the doctor has to cut on your side and remove that appendix. Said, the Lord evidently knew all that, if there be one, as you claim. Said, why didn't he just put a zipper on it? Said, your whole abdomen, said, you need surgery, just zip it down, take it out, and zip it back. Well, you know, you answer a fool according to his folly. And Bales, when he got up to speak, he says, Mr. Teller, he says, there's a reason for that. He said, if the Lord had put a zipper on everybody's abdomen, he said the kids had been playing with it and wore it out. And you know, there's some wisdom to that. You ever stop thinking about it? Man is indeed fearfully and wonderfully made. You take the heart. It pumps 6,000 pounds of blood through 10,000 arteries and veins every 24 hours. And it works for a period of 60 to 90 years. Now, why is that? You take the city, puts in the sewers, water lines, to bring water, take refuse from our houses. They run all over the city with a pumping station somewhere. And we say to ourselves, men had to plan that and put that in. Engineers had to devise it. And yet in the heart, man says that it just happened. Who can believe it? Look at the nervous system. The number of impulses, electrical impulses, going all over our bodies. And then we looked at electrical system that comes all across this country, fed out of these stations that are set up to produce electricity. And here we enjoy the lights this morning from the electrical lines, the electricity that comes in as a result of these electrical lines. And we say, man's ingenuity. I remember about the first time I ever saw electric light. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. What a contrast to the old kerosene lamp that you'd carry around in your hand from room to room in order to light the way. But now you just hit a switch. But ladies and gentlemen, through the bodies of every one of us is an electrical system that carries messages and electrical impulses. How did it happen? I say God created man and put them there, is how I account for it. The design shows that there is a God. Now, just hurriedly, I'm going to quit. There's a moral argument I think is worth consideration. Everybody has a moral standard, believe it or not. Now, they don't have the morals that you have, or I might have. But everybody's got a moral standard, even atheists. Their moral standard is not necessarily because of what they've been taught by atheism. But everybody has a moral standard. There's an ought or ought not to in everybody. We recognize this when we say, you've got my seat. Well, why is it your seat if there's not any kind of guideline or standard? You're in my place. You got my paper. And we recognize a moral standard, though it vary and differ from society, to generation to generation. But I raise the question, who instilled the moral standard into the hearts of men and women? And it's just as real, ladies and gentlemen, to stop us and to thwart us and to deter us as the wall is. When I go to that wall over there, I stop. And there's a standard in me and there's one in you that serves as a barrier, as a wall does physically. It says, no, don't you go any farther. And you don't go. Or I could brought a pistol this morning. I just walk down here and start shooting, but I won't do that. That's just as much a deterrent, my moral standard of refusing to fire and kill you as I try to run through that wall. And everybody has a standard. It differs by degrees, but we all have standards. And I'm saying, ladies and gentlemen, the reason is because there is a moral law giver. Then, there's the aesthetic argument. And by that I mean that we enjoy beauty. And we can distinguish between that which is ugly and that which is beautiful. By sensations, either by the optic nerve or the auditory nerve, we all distinguish. Now, I've never seen, and you haven't either, an animal that can appreciate art. I've never seen an animal that can appreciate or enjoy good music. The dog would know any difference between the Mozart or Beethoven or Bach. You see how high class I'm getting this morning? Than it would Ernest Tubb. Huh? Or whoever. But we do. We appreciate. Because there's something peculiar about man that he has that no other animal on the face of the earth has or possesses. And the reason for it is that God created man in his own image, and he can see color, and he paints, and he's artistic, and he appreciates and enjoys music and sound. He lacks color, but not an animal. And that shows that there's someone yonder who instilled that, who implanted that within the hearts, within the soul, within the minds of individuals. Animals hear, animals see, but animals can't appreciate. What they do is totally instinctive, as I talked about a while ago. But man, he has the power to decide and to change and to order. But a bird comes back and builds the same identical nest year after year. It doesn't say, let's make a two-story job here this time. Huh? They don't say, let's just have three little birdies this time. It's all instinctive. It's all instinctive. It shows that there's something beyond this earth, mundane earth, that empowers or implants man with these values. And I believe that's the designer. In closing this morning, ladies and gentlemen, James D. Bales, longtime professor at Harding College in Searcy, Arkansas, has dealt with this issue through the years. And Bales said in his book, Atheism's Faith and Fruits, atheism removes the very basis of morality. He says that morality is dependent upon free choice. And we're responsible as a result of choice, but atheism takes away choice, hence destroys responsibility. Secondly, unbelief destroys morality by defining it as what men think is right or wrong. Might becomes the only standard of right. Happiness here and now made the goal of life. Atheism leads to a low view of human life. And atheism eliminates morality with reference to sex. Now, I included that for this one reason, primarily. We're seeing today the fruits of atheism. Don't tell me we're not friends. We're living in a society where whatever one thinks is right, and whatever one thinks is wrong, and human life has very little value if we want to get rid of it, abortion and euthanasia. If there is someone to whom we're responsible, it changes the picture entirely. If I'm not going to give an account to anybody but myself, or if death terminates life and annihilates the being that he is no more, then let's live it up, and might makes right, and the law of the jungle, and do as we please. And I want to tell you, there's no basis, logical basis, for the atheist to oppose anything, anywhere that goes on. Crime, drugs, rape, whatever it may be, they can't logically oppose it. They do it simply because of their environmental values or what they may have picked up from religious upbringing before, but nothing inherent in atheism. Atheism is negative and destructive. Madeline Mary O'Hare said not too long ago, "Oh, I wish all the churches would close down and we could turn them over to homes to take care of the needy." Well, friend, I'm going to tell you something. They wouldn't have to wait till the church building or the churches closed down and take the houses. They got them everywhere now if they want to use them, but they're not interested in that. They're only interested in destroying, and never anything positive that builds up. There's a dial of Bible head. We call it dial of Bible thought. They call it dial of atheist over in Columbus. You can call any time of the day, 24 hours a day, Columbus, Ohio, and get a message from an atheist. Very inspired, I'm sure. Let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. God made us. God put us here. God loves us. God provides for us. And the evidence is abounding and bountiful that God is. And in the words of Daniel in the long ago, there is a God in heaven. We're singing the song of invitation. If you're in the audience and not a New Testament Christian, as we sing this song, we want you to come and give God your heart. Serve Him, live for Him, honor Him, and then after a while, go to heaven. Will you come and obey Jesus the Christ? Be cleansed and washed in His blood. Be remitted of all sins. Leave the building with a clear conscience, without the burdens of sin. We trust that you've come. Pray that you will. If you're an early child of God, would you come home and be restored to your first love? As together we say, and while we sing.